Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you on this Tuesday evening. We are joined, as always, Tuesday at 6:07 by Sports Illustrated writer Brian Driscoll, who covers the Fighting Irish football team and other sports for IrishBreakdown.com. And we're going to talk a lot about Notre Dame players in the NFL draft in this particular conversation. Brian, good evening to you.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I am you're interrupting my mock drafting to have this conversation.
I noticed you were mocking. We're in the midst of ours, too, and doggone it, all the offensive tackles and three best wide receivers were off the board before my Broncos picked at 15, so I was a little annoyed, but I see why Elway wants to move up now. There's a chance those top three tackles and top three receivers all could be gone at 15.
Well, and that's why I did actually have trades in my mock draft. I've never understood having mock drafts when you can't allow trades, because yep. That's not how the NFL draft works.
So, exactly right.
But, yeah, we're actually having a mock draft contest at Irish Breakdown right now. But, I mean, look, Elway wants a receiver or a tackle, and the only way he's going to be able to get either is to jump into the top 10 region. I mean, that's the only way it's going to happen.
Yeah. Cleveland, I think, at 10 might be their spot, but we'll have to see. Okay, I want to start with Chase Claypool, Brian, because I'm not a talent evaluator, but I've done a lot of reading the last few days, including over the weekend, and Chase Claypool, to me, is all over the place in analysis and mock drafts. I've seen him go at 97. I've seen him go at number 30, the end of the first round, to the Green Bay Packers. So let me just ask about Claypool from this standpoint. There's a lot of choices at wide receiver. We've heard this is the deepest wide receiver draft we've seen in a long time. With that being said, what do you believe are a couple of Claypool's biggest strengths, and is there something you see, a weakness in Claypool, that might lead people to drop him deep into the second round or maybe early third round in these mock drafts?
Well, from a strength standpoint, you just aren't going to find many guys that have his combination of size and speed. I mean, in the NFL Combine showed that. The list of play of wide receivers that are over 230 pounds and ran 4.45 or lower is a short list. It's Calvin Johnson and Chase Claypool. That's a pretty good list to be on if you're Chase Claypool. And you know, I think what we saw from him this year is we finally saw him put together the consistency from an effort standpoint. I mean, Chase has always flashed big-time ability, but his game lacked maturity. I don't want to say he lacked maturity, but his game lacked maturity because he was so raw and he never really was challenged or really taught the game in high school. And this year he put it all together. And the Chase Claypool, we saw flashes of, you know, you think of the Wake Forest game when he had like 9 catches for over 180 yards. And as a sophomore, we saw it consistently this year. And I think that allowed his raw God-given ability to just take over and really dominate. And his numbers would have been way better with better quarterback play. I mean, I'm not the only person that says that. I've read multiple NFL scouts, you know, say that, you know, without putting their name to it, which I don't love. But yeah. I think the thing that hurts him and why he's not being looked at as a surefire first-round pick when you consider his size, strength, his athleticism, and his senior year production is he's still very raw. And a lot of analysts like to look for flaws. And if you're looking at Chase Claypool's flaws, he's not a great route runner. He doesn't really understand, you know, proper stemming and using, you know, his release to manipulate DBs and do all those kind of things. Well, as a coach, fine. The way I look at it is that's less things that I have to break him of if he's not a really advanced guy. And so I think some team is going to be smart enough to take him in the late first or early second round, and he's going to end up being one of the best players in this draft.
Well, Brian, another guy that we've talked about, I think we talked about him last week, who has shown up in some different spots, is Cole Kmet. So let me ask it to you this way. Do you think Kmet is closer to being a first-round pick or a third-round pick?
First, for sure. And the sources that I've talked to don't think he's going to make it past 40. When you look at those first, you know, you look at Chicago's first pick, you look at Indianapolis' first or second pick, assuming Indianapolis doesn't trade 34 to move up into the first round to get Jordan Love, the quarterback, which is something I've seen and heard some chatter on. But I with Cole Kmet, I honestly don't pay attention to a lot of the mocks about him, because one of the frustrating things that I see, and I wrote about this today at IrishBreakdown.com, is every time they talk about him, they talk about how weak the draft class is at tight end, which is irrelevant to the talent level of Cole Kmet. You're either a first-round talent, a second-round talent, or a third-round talent. And what is around you at your position has nothing to do with what you do on film and what you can bring to a team. If anything, the fact that the draft class is so weak is something that's going to boost Cole Kmet in the eyes of NFL teams, because you can get an impact receiver in round two or three. If you don't get Cole Kmet late in the first round, early second, you're not going to get a tight end in this draft class, most likely, based on, you know, what people are saying after that. And so I think it should help him. But I just think when you look at him, he's 2 years younger than Tyler Eifert was when Tyler Eifert went to the draft. You know, he tied Ken McAfee's touchdown record this past year. That's a record that's held for a long time, and a lot of really good Notre Dame tight ends haven't been able to get there. And he did it in the same number of games as Ken McAfee in 11. So I just think he's a kid that, to me, has the highest floor of the top, the big three, so to speak, of the potential first-round draft picks for Notre Dame. He may not have the upside that Chase Claypool and Julian Aguara has, but from a floor standpoint, I think he has the highest floor.
So let me read this to you, Brian. Brian Driscoll from Sports Illustrated, our guest. This is one person's opinion. Lance Zierlein is in charge of writing the prospect bios at NFL.com. Now, he lists a whole bunch of strengths for Cole Kmet, so I don't want to make it sound like it's all negatives. There's a lot of pluses. Three things that are weaknesses. Now, you are a guy that breaks down the film. You know technique as a player and a coach. So let me just read these three to you about Kmet, and you tell me if you're buying this or not. One weakness, body control and strength as a blocker needs work. Below average instincts and angles as a move blocker, and inefficient and slow getting into block fits. Your reaction to that?
I think those are all fair. I've read that, and I think he did a good job of noting that Cole did not block as well as he should have when you consider his his size and his natural strength. One thing that I would somewhat disagree on is I don't think his strength as a blocker is an issue. I think his technique is an issue. I don't think he always takes good angles. I don't think he shows the understanding of how to work his body into a certain place to cut off. He just kind of goes and hits. I think two things about that. Number one is him not playing football a lot in the spring. He would come to practice, but then he's playing baseball, so he's missing film sessions and doing those kind of things. I think that stunted his growth a little bit in that regard. And I think the other part of it is Chip Long being a offensive coordinator, I think somewhat stunted his growth a little bit as well. But the effort's there, and I think that the natural punch is there. He just needs to be refined. But the reality is the way a lot of teams use their tight end nowadays, it's not quite as important as it used to be. But I also think it's something that a smart coach is going to look at and say, yeah, he's not actually that far off. He's just got to fix his footwork, and he's got to work on his hand placement. If he does that, he's going to be okay. And it's something that I think a rookie mid camp and a, you know, one off season in the NFL can work some of those kinks out of.
Brian, anytime, whether it's reading mock drafts or just evaluations of these players in the draft, I mean, we're reading a lot of different voices and trusting other people's eyes as far as what they're seeing. And, you know, we can agree or disagree with a lot of them. Are there any specific guys, maybe one or two, who you tend to put the most stock in what they're saying as they're evaluating these guys?
I think from so take away the mock drafting part of it, you know, and the ranking part of it. I think Dane Brugler from The Athletic does a really nice job with the actual guys. I think if, you know, I wrote an article today kind of breaking down some of the stuff he wrote, and I said, you know, like, I don't agree with where he ranked Cole Kmet, but I had no beef with the things he said about Cole Kmet's game. And I think to me that's more important than necessarily placement, because, I mean, look, mock drafts are supposed to be fun. It's kind of like predicting who's going to win the national championship this year. Like, I have no idea. But I think he does. He's one of the best, in my view, of actually evaluating the talent. I think Daniel Jeremiah does a pretty solid job with that as well. He also has a scouting background, so he looks for maybe some finer points than a lot of these, you know, internet draft experts. You could see my air quotes, you would see me doing air quotes when I say expert. You know, I think that you know, they're able to see the superficial stuff. And the thing that I think that I like about Dane and Daniel Jeremiah is they can see a guy that's not a great route runner and understand why and identify why. So is he not a great route runner because he's got stiff hips, he has tight ankles, he doesn't really have instincts as a player, or is he not a great route runner because, as you see with the rest of the receiving corps on his team, they're not really taught to do that. And that is something that you can correct. And as a coach, that's what I always look for. Does a guy have the physical tools to do this thing that I would ask him to do from a technical standpoint? If he does, then I can coach him into that, and that's what you get paid for. If he doesn't have the physical ability to do it, then there's all the coaching in the world is not going to make him good at it.
Brian Driscoll, Sports Illustrated writer, irishbreakdown.com, talking about Notre Dame players in the NFL draft on Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Sean and Darren also with you. Brian, give me your analysis, what you expect the next couple of days to be like for Julian Okorah, another guy that's all over the place on mock drafts. What do you think is realistic from a draft standpoint for the edge rusher from Notre Dame?
Now, that's an interesting one, Darren, because with Cole Kmet and Chase Claypool, I don't buy the third-round range. I think they're late first, early to middle second-round guys.
Agreed. Okwara
is the one that's the wild card because he's got first-round talent. I think we can all agree. Like, Dane Brugler ranked him as 106th best player in this draft. A year ago, he had him in the first round. That's the kind of talent that he has.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he was so bad on film this year that a lot of people have dropped him. Now, some teams are going to look at it and say, well, yeah, but he didn't stop being that guy he was 2 years ago. He still is long. He's still athletic. He still has strong hands. We just need to, you know, get him to put his head on straight. And they're going to see him, and they're going to have him higher on their board. Teams that want a guy that's ready-made, the guy that you don't have to kick in the pants to get going, is probably going to have him fall down. So he's the one guy that I honestly don't have a clue where he's going to go. Would it shock me if some team decided to take him late in the first round? No. Would it shock me if he fell to the third round? No. Because it's going to depend so much on how the board goes and how teams view his senior season, which outside of the Virginia game was a huge disappointment.
Yeah, Troy Pride Jr., I wanted to ask you about him. He's kind of been a recent riser as far as some of the draft prognostications. And there was something Pro Football Focus said about him. They said he has a long way to go in terms of the finer points of the position. Of course, cornerback, but they love his man-to-man skills. So I'm curious what you think of that evaluation.
Yeah, that one kind of puzzled me a little bit because it's hard to play man-to-man effectively if you don't have the nuances down, right? Like, you can actually be more effective playing zone if you're just fast or long because you can react to the ball more. So I think with Troy Pride, I think the more you watch his film, I think a lot of scouts and analysts first watch these kids on TV, and they have the same reaction to Troy Pride that every Notre Dame fan that's never actually been at a game and watched him has, which is, man, he gives up a lot of back shoulder throws. Well, then I point out that his numbers, he gave up 10 fewer catches and about 100 yards less than Julian Love did when he was an All-American. And then you start studying the film and you're like, yeah, he gives up a couple throws, but they don't even try to throw at him the rest of the game. Why? Because he's all over the dude that he's going against. And, you know, and you go back and you watch how he played against Clemson last year against Justin Ross and Hunter Renfrow and T. Higgins. He gave up 2 catches for 12 yards, and they were both short throws that were caught near the line of scrimmage. So he's a guy that, to me, is someone you can plug and play early on from a man coverage standpoint. So if you're looking for a nickel corner, if you're looking for someone on the outside that can come in and be a situational corner, you can do that right away. And I think he has a natural enough feel and an instinct to, as jumping routes and playing routes, that he's a guy you can use. Where Troy has to get better, he's got to use his hands better at the line of scrimmage, and he's able to overcome that in college because he's so fast. And he's got to do a better job of reading the body language of the receiver, which will then allow him to be more effective playing the football. If he can improve in those two areas, then he's a starting cornerback in the NFL. If he can't, then he's going to be a nickel rotational guy, which, as we've seen in this offseason, a lot of teams are paying a lot of money for a third corner, way that the NFL is now. So he'll find a home. Just how good he can be is going to be determined if he can really shore up his game in those two areas.
Brian, final question for you. I'm putting you as a general manager of a top 10 team that is in need of a quarterback, knowing if this doesn't work out, it could cost you your job down the line. Do you touch Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama in the top 10?
I do not. I do not, and it has nothing to do with his injury history. I think Tua is a very good college football player, but when I see him and I predict in the NFL, I don't see a great arm. I see a bit of a long release. I see a guy that thinks he's a lot more athletic than he actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I see a guy that doesn't always make his progressions at the right time. And I see a guy that if we're really serious about Tua, and you can look at the great numbers, you go watch him play against Georgia in the SEC title game last year. Watch him play against Clemson. Watch him play against Mississippi State with all those first, second, and third round draft picks that they had on defense last year back in 2018. And he struggled in a lot of those games where they actually had defenses that could match up personnel-wise with all the first-round players that he has around him. Henry Ruggs is going to be a top 13 pick. He was the third leading receiver on Alabama's receiving core this year, right? Think about that. He didn't miss any games. So I just don't see a guy that has the ability to translate his brilliance in college into the NFL. So, no, I would not touch him in the top 10. And then when you throw the injury history on there, especially the hip, that makes me not want him. To me, Joe Burrow's the sure thing. I think there's major concerns I have for both Tua and Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. If I'm a team in the top 10 and I can't get Joe Burrow, I may trade out, get an extra pick, and take Jordan Love. To me, he's the second highest ceiling quarterback in this draft behind Joe Burrow. I think he's a guy that if you can look at what he did as a junior before Mike Sanford got him as a senior and his game dipped big time, he's a guy that's got every physical tool that you want to be a great quarterback. And he reminds me a lot of Pat Mahomes in that you got to harness that a little bit, that talent a little bit. He's like a Drew Locke, Pat Mahomes kind of guy. If you can harness that, he's got a chance to be a star.
Brian, who ends up being the first Notre Dame player picked? And where?
I think it's going to be Cole Kmet. Gotcha. I think it's Cole Kmet. I haven't gone to the 49ers at 31. I've heard some rumblings that the Niners really want to get a second tight end, not only for the run game, but so they can do more with George Kittle in the pass game. And so a lot of people are looking at receiver for them, but I've heard that the second tight end is really where they want to go. And I've also got my eye on the Packers right there at number 30 as a potential landing spot for him there. But I see him going, if he gets past 31, then I think the next team to look out for at that point in time is the Colts or the Bears.
Okay.
All right, Brian, you write for IrishBreakdown.com. What should we expect over the next few days with the NFL draft getting started on Thursday?
A lot of NFL draft coverage, and if you're someone who likes mock drafts, and I'm looking at you too, okay, we're having a mock draft contest where if you submit your first-round mock draft, you can include trades. The top two finishers get a full-year membership free to IrishBreakdown.com. So if you come to IrishBreakdown.com, you'll see our mock draft contest there on the community page. Submit your first-round draft pick by Wednesday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And the top two winners will get a full year free. So that's the really important thing going on right now at IrishBreakdown.com.
All right, IrishBreakdown.com. Take part in the mock draft and read and listen to the opinions of Brian Driscoll from Sports Illustrated, who joins us every Tuesday. Brian, great stuff as always. Enjoy the NFL draft, and we'll have plenty to talk about next Tuesday.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. Brian Driscoll, Sports Illustrated. Again, check out the website, IrishBreakdown.com, and the mock draft is a fun idea. Everybody, I think, that likes football enjoys mock drafts.
Absolutely.
And your chance to throw your opinions out there. And the NFL draft will be on WSBT Radio. Every pick can be heard on WSBT Radio, starting with coverage Thursday at 7 o'clock via ESPN Radio.